From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, a heartthrob of the 50s, he starred opposite Natalie Wood and Sophia Loren, and he was secretly gay. We talk with Tab Hunter about life as a closeted movie star. He's written a new memoir called Tab Hunter Confidential. Then we'll hear about the agent who represented Tab Hunter and another closeted heartthrob, Rock Hudson. That agent, Henry Wilson, was gay, but most of his clients were very attractive straight men. He ran what Robert Hoffler describes as an Adonis factory. We'll talk with Hoffler, a reporter for Variety, who's written a new book called The Man Who Invented Rock Hudson, The Pretty Boys and Dirty Deals of Henry Wilson. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. He was a heartthrob of the 50s, blonde and clean-cut. He made the covers of all the movie magazines. He was described as the boy next door, the all-American boy, Hollywood's most eligible bachelor. He starred opposite Natalie Wood and Sophia Loren. And he was gay. Now Tab Hunter has written a memoir about what it was like to keep that secret in Hollywood. The book is called Tab Hunter Confidential. Hunter made more than 50 films, including Damn Yankees, Battle Cry, That Kind of Woman, Ride the Wild Surf, and The Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean. Hunter spoofed his own image in John Waters' 1981 film Polyester, in which he seduces a suburban housewife played by Divine, a 300-pound man, in drag. Tab Hunter, welcome to Fresh Air. I'm so glad you wrote this book. You know, you're one of the few actors who can talk about what it was like to be a heartthrob in the 50s while you were in the closet. Or at least I should say, you're the only one who's willing to talk about it if there's more out there. So I'm really glad you wrote it. How long have you been out?
Well, thank you. You know, I had to write the book. Number one, the reason I wrote the book, and I think that's important, is because I heard someone else was going to be writing a book about me. And I figured, look, get it from the horse's mouth, not from some horse's ass after I'm dead and gone, because we all know how people put their own spin on things. And I figured, I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be very truthful. And, you know, I hope it's a good read, but also you get the facts from me. Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm not an out there kind of a person. I never have been. I've always been a very private person. I had a very strong mother who said things like, you know, nothing in your life is for show. Do this, you know, hold back, you this, this. And consequently, what do? I wind up in show business. I mean, it's pretty ironic.
But, you know, I'm wondering if you felt you had to be an actor off the screen as well as on the screen, because off screen you had to act the role of Tab Hunter. You were gay. Tab Hunter was supposed to be straight. And also, I mean, the name wasn't yours. And, you know, let's face it, a lot of actors had personas off screen that the Hollywood studio created for them. But when you're in the closet, that sense of a persona is even more extreme.
I think a lot of people place importance on all of that, you know, being in the closet and this and that. You know, number one, you're a human being. You have to be yourself. And that's the most important thing. Of course, you have conflicts and all of that within yourself. At the time, I had a lot of those. And I was a young, wide-eyed kid thrown into the studio system and starring in motion pictures, and I loved it. I mean, God, what young man wouldn't love all that stuff? But by the same token, my touch of reality in a really unrealistic world were my horses, my love of my animals. I mean, the horses were my touch of reality in an unrealistic world.
So, did you know that you were gay when you became a movie star?
Did I know I was gay? The word didn't even exist when I was a movie star. I mean, this is something only in the last, you know, I don't know how long, but no, I was, number one, I'm a human being. That's what it's all about. I knew I had these, you know, that my sexuality was different than the average person, but I had the conflicts of living with that.
Did the studio... Like, who in Hollywood knew about your sexual orientation? Because this would have been a big issue had it been revealed. So did the studio heads know? Did other actors know?
I never said anything. I was very quiet. I was, you know, nothing. I never was out there, so to speak. Not at all. The people who knew, I'm sure, probably my agent, Dick Clayton, the studio had to know because I saw a memo when I was researching, you know, when I was doing my work at the archives for the book. You know, George, what's his name? George Abbott, who produced Damn Yankees, didn't want me for the film. He thought I was a little, to quote his memo to Jack Warner, a little light in the loafers or whatever. But that's his problem, not mine. Jack Warner said, look, I bought Damn Yankees for Tab Hunter. I bought Pajama Game for Doris Day. Tab is going to do the film. I mean, I have no idea what went on in the offices at the studios other than when I had questions to ask them myself.
You had a relationship with Tony Perkins for a couple of years. Were there places you could be together without anyone knowing that you were more than buddies? I mean, were you able to be out in public together?
I'd go out with Tony. We'd go to premieres. We'd go to movies. We'd go to the opening of the Ice Capades. and things like that. We might double date to go out. Tony was a little uncomfortable sometimes going out, like if we just go out to a movie or something like that. And in those days, he would wear a baseball cap and sunglasses or something. Maybe, who knows, maybe he didn't want to be seen with me. I have no idea. But I never worried about it that much, really. He'd take his car someplace. I'd take my car someplace. Occasionally, we'd go in the same car. I knew Tony for about 3 years. And, he was a very, very fine actor, a very busy young man doing plays on Broadway and films in Europe and films at Paramount. He was under contract to Paramount. And I was at Warner Brothers. So we had our own careers, our own lives, aside from the time we had spent together.
Mm-hmm. You know, you write that he had shock therapy to try to turn himself straight. Was that when you knew him?
No, that was quite a number of years after.
What was your reaction when you heard that?
I was literally shocked. Yeah, I was quite surprised.
Were you ever?
But I did see Tony a few years before he passed away, and I saw Barry and the children up at the house, and it was just wonderful to see that. It really was. I was very, very happy for him.
Were you ever troubled in that kind of way about being gay yourself? I mean, he underwent shock therapy to try to change. Did you ever feel pressured enough or uncomfortable enough to want to change that badly?
And I mean, the change, I think you have to learn to be comfortable with what you are. I mean, I'm not going to lie to myself and, you know, say get. I thought of getting married a couple of times, but then I thought that would be so deceitful, so untrue. That wouldn't be fair. And fair is a wonderful four-letter word beginning with F that we really aren't always fair in our lives, and I think we have to be.
An article that could have really damaged you but didn't was published in 1955 in the tabloid Confidential, and it was headlined "The Lowdown on That Disorderly Conduct Charge Against Tab Hunter." You reprint a paragraph from this in your book, and I'd like to just read some of it just to give a sense of what those times were like.
And that's just one article in Confidential. I think I made three covers and four articles.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me just read some of this. It all started with a vice cop who was drifting in and out of Hollywood's queer bars on the afternoon of October 14th, looking and listening for tips on the newest notions of the limp-wristed lads. Pausing for a scotch and water in one gay joint, the deputy struck up a conversation with a couple of lispers who happily prattled that they were set for a big binge that very evening at 2501 Hope Street in a suburb of L.A. One drink led to another, and the pair finally invited the snooper to come along. There was only one dashing requirement: bring pajamas.
Please.
Since breaking up such queer romps was his business, the detective pretended to fall in with his barroom chums and arranged to accompany them. Between snorts, however, he called the Los Angeles Sheriff's Office for reinforcements. Wow, what was your reaction when you read this article?
You see why I wrote my own book? I'm not going to have some garbage like this spilled out there. I was a kid out of the Coast Guard, and a friend of mine, Terry Marsteller, who's passed away, said, "Do you want to go to a party this evening?" I said, "Fine." So I went and I walked in, and I'd been to a gay party before, big deal. So I saw a couple guys dancing and a couple people dancing over here and there and a couple women dancing over there. And I thought, oh gosh, it's one of those parties. So I walked to the refrigerator, literally opened the refrigerator, started to reach in for something to eat, and some cops came in and took us all downtown. Big deal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was 15 and a half years old, 16 and a half years old.
So you're about 21 when this was published.
Yes, and the interesting story is this, that Confidential magazine was going to be doing a story on Rock Hudson. So our agent at the time was Henry Wilson, and Henry did not want that. So what he did was he said, "Look, kill the story on Rock Hudson. I'll give you two stories." And he gave Confidential magazine the story on Rory Calhoun being in prison and on my being at that party.
Wow. Isn't that called betrayal?
No kidding. That's Hollywood, my dear.
Wow. So was the story they were going to write about Rock Hudson about him being gay?
I have no idea. I have no idea what the story was going to be about, but they were going to do some scandalous thing, I'm sure, on Rock.
So how did you find out that it was your agent who gave them the story?
Because it came out.
much later? Or?
Oh, yes, it did. And I was shocked to hear that.
So you and Rock Hudson had the same agents?
Yes, Henry Wilson was the agent for Rory Calhoun, Guy Madison, Rock, myself, a number of people. And he discovered Lana Turner. He was Natalie Wood's agent for a short while. Rhonda Fleming he discovered. I mean, a number of people.
By the time you found out, was he still your agent?
That's why he gave it to, because I was no longer his. He was no longer my agent.
Oh, he was no longer your agent at the time he gave it.
No, I left. Henry and went with Dick Layton when Dick became an agent, because Dick was my oldest friend, and to this day he still is. You know, he's 90 years old. God bless him, and he's a beautiful human being. And I always said that when you're an agent, I want to be your client.
Okay, so this article that I quoted is really obnoxiously written. It's published to cause a scandal, knowing that it could hurt you. Did anybody take the bait? I mean, what happened after this? And it was a distortion of a party you'd actually went to, but the party was busted. So they could say, oh, no, this is factually correct. You know, he was at this party. The party was busted. So what happened afterwards? What were the consequences?
Well, the consequence, I became the biggest star at Warner Brothers at that time. Explain it to me, please. I don't understand what happened.
So instead of this article hurting your career, are you saying it helped
people,
you? Or was it just...
No, I don't think it helped me. But I do think that people believe what they want to believe.
Did anyone ever try to blackmail you?
Oh, a couple times, yeah. I wrote about it in the book.
So what did you do?
I talked to my friend Martha, who's an attorney, and we just got to get out of this nonsense. I mean, I just hate people that think like that, you know. I just can't tolerate that kind of behavior.
So how did you end it?
I let Martha take care of it for me.
And you don't know what Martha did?
I think we gave this person some money, just say, get the heck out of here, get out of my life.
My guest is Tab Hunter. He's written a new memoir called Tab Hunter Confidential, The Making of a Movie Star. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Tab Hunter, and his new memoir is called Tab Hunter Confidential, The Making of a Movie Star. How did you become an actor? You're one of those actors who became famous without having gone to acting school, though far fewer people went to acting school back then. But, I mean, you learned by doing it. So how did you get to do it in the first place?
Well, I was discovered at the stable as a stable boy, shoveling the real stuff. And I then was introduced to an agent later. At first, I was a young, wide-eyed kid going, wow, look at this. Look what's happening. But then I realized, no, if you've got to have some staying power. You've got to have some legs. So that was important to me, to really learn my craft. And I was very fortunate to work with some really sensational people.
Now, you had a singing career, too.
Oh, yes.
Your biggest hit was Young Love. Whose idea was it for you to start recording? Was this something you wanted to do or something that a music or film executive thought would be a good idea?
No, I always liked singing very much. I sang in the choir at St. Paul's Parochial School, and I loved music. My mother always encouraged me to sing. She kept saying, you've got a nice voice. You've got a really good voice. You should sing more. You should sing more. And I studied singing because I was hoping that one day I would get to do a musical, whether it be in the theater or in film. But Natalie and I were in Chicago for the promotion of The Burning Hills. And Howard Miller had a huge radio show. He was a major disc jockey. And he said, gosh, you should put out a record if you can sing. And I said, well, I love to sing. He said, well, let me put you in touch with Randy Wood at Dot Records. Dot is where Pat Boone, Bonnie Guitar, you know, oh gosh, just go on and on. Gail Storm, a lot of people were there. So I met with Randy. He heard me sing. He gave me a song called Young Love. He just was very excited. We went in and recorded on a Friday. By Monday, 100,000 records had been shipped, and it shot up to number one in the nation for quite some time.
What were some of the differences between how you were treated in the recording industry when you had hit records and how you were treated in the film industry? In terms of the way you were marketed, how people treated you as a person?
Well, the interesting thing, even a more interesting story, I think, than that is the fact that Warner Brothers had me under contract. That meant for everything. Mm-hmm. So I did, I cut this record for Dot. And Warner's thought, whoa, wait a minute, we can't have that. You're under contract to us. So they immediately stopped me from releasing 100,000 advance copies of an album that I had done and a number of things. So I went on a tour that they'd sent, the studio sent me on, and I asked everyone, they wanted me to talk about the spirit of St. Louis. Well, we all know that Jimmy Stewart, you know, played Lindbergh, and he and a fly flew across the Atlantic and landed safely at Le Bourget. So people would say, yeah, we know that. But what about your records? What about this? What about that? And they were always asking about those things. So I said, why don't you all drop a little note to Mr. Jack Warner, care of Warner Brothers Studios, Burbank, California? So they did, and Warner hit the roof. So he thought, we've got to do something about this. And it took him a long time, but he actually started Warner Brothers Records because of me.
Oh, really?
I was the first recording artist on that label.
So that they could release records by the people who they, quote, owned.
And then, yes, and then I recorded for Warner Brothers also. In fact, I've just released a CD with tunes from my Dot, originals from the Dot and the Warner Brothers label.
Well, why don't we hear your 1957 hit, your first hit, Young Love.
They say for every boy and girl there's just one love in this whole world, and I know I found mine. The heavenly touch of your embrace tells me no one could take your place.
That's Tab Hunter and his first hit, Young Love. And Tab Hunter has a new memoir, and it's called Tab Hunter Confidential, The Making of a Movie Star. John Waters cast you in his film Polyester. Divine plays, Divine, who was a 300-pound man who played the leading lady in a lot of John Waters' movies, plays a very put-upon housewife who learns that her husband is secretly a pornographer. And you play the owner of what, an art house movie theater?
Art house drive-in.
An art house drive-in, that's right. An art house drive-in. And you kind of seduce Divine with ulterior motives that she is not aware of. But you sweep her off her feet. And I thought I'd play a scene between the two of you.
All right.
Pretty horrible, isn't it?
All those poor people. Did you see it happen?
Yes, I saw it happen.
I was following that van. That other thing cut right in front, bam, hit it head on.
Excuse me.
Oh.
It's really horrible.
Oh, it is. It's just too horrible. I can't look.
You know, why don't we take a ride in the country and get away from all this mess? I mean, it's a beautiful day, and I find you quite attractive.
But I don't even know your name.
It's Todd, honey.
Todd?
Todd Tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Francine Fishbaugh.
Francine Fishbaugh. Beautiful name, fits you well. Yeah, I got something I want to show you.
Yes?
It's long.
Ooh.
And it's sleek.
Ooh.
And it's powerful.
Ooh, what is it, Todd?
It's my new vest.
That's Tab Hunter and a Divine in a scene from John Waters' film Polyester. Tab Hunter, what was it like for you to do this movie?
Well, I was just finishing a play in Minneapolis or somewhere in the Midwest, and I got a phone call from John, and he said, I'd love for you to, I'm doing a film, and I'd love for you to do it if you're available. And I said, well, I do. Why don't you send me the script? He said, well, I have to tell you, it's with a 300-pound transvestite. And I said, so? I love your work. I'm a big fan of yours, John. Who could ever forget Pink Flamingos, you know, or who could ever forget the Diana Linkletter story? So John sent me the script, and I thought, what have I got to lose? I've got everything to gain. It's a wonderful opportunity to work with a really creative man who's fun, has a great sense of humor. Divine, I had met at a cocktail party that David Hockney had a number of years prior to that, and I thought this would be a wonderful experience. So I had about 10 days off or 2 weeks off prior to opening a play in another city. So I did the film for John at that time, went to Baltimore. John shoots all of his films in Baltimore. And it was a fun experience, I've got to tell you. It was really great.
Tab Hunter, his new memoir is called Tab Hunter Confidential. Here's Tab Hunter singing the theme from Polyester. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
This is your life, Francine. Smell the fragrant perfumed me, darling, my dreams, purely polyester. Major funding for Fresh Air comes from Barnes & Noble, featuring Secrets of the Widow's Son by David Shugarts, a look at the upcoming sequel to The Da Vinci Code. Additional support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Bantam Books, publisher of No True Glory, a frontline account of the battle for Fallujah by Bing West, co-author of The March Up. This is NPR. National Public Radio.
Coming up, a star maker of the 50s who taught his gay actors how to be butch and helped his straight actors be more poised and polished. He kept some secrets and sold out others. We talk with Robert Hoffler about his new book, The Man Who Invented Rock Hudson, The Pretty Boys and Dirty Deals of Henry Wilson. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Hollywood agent who helped create Tab Hunter and Rock Hudson, the agent who protected Rock Hudson's secret gay life and tried to expose Tab Hunter's, is the subject of a new book by my guest Robert Hoffler. It's called The Man Who Invented Rock Hudson, The Pretty Boys and Dirty Deals of Henry Wilson. Hoffler describes Wilson as a beefy, tough-talking, chronically phobic, arch-conservative homosexual. Most of his clients, who were nicknamed Henry's Boys, were straight actors. His roster included Rory Calhoun, John Derrick, Chad Everett, Nick Adams, Robert Wagner, and Troy Donahue. My guest Robert Hoffler has covered show business for decades and currently works for Variety. Is there a certain type of actor that Wilson handled and helped create?
Well, I really wouldn't even call them actors. They were personalities. And he did that for a very specific reason. He wanted to be the star maker. He was not interested in people like Montgomery Clift, Marlon Brando, or James Dean. These were people who had Broadway experience, who came to Hollywood with a certain cachet and a great deal of power, actually. What he wanted was to pick up people off the street. And he did. I mean, you know, he found Guy Madison in an audience and, you know, put him under contract to David O. Selznick. He found Roy Calhoun at some party. You know, Rock Hudson brought in some photographs to his office. I mean, Henry Wilson was the agent in Hollywood of first resort. And most of these people had no acting experience whatsoever. What they did have is that they were extraordinarily good looking. And for the most part, they were personalities. And it's interesting because, you know, my book focuses on all the men he handled, but certainly I go into the first big star he created, who was Lon Turner. And when he couldn't get Lana Turner under contract to 20th Century Fox, and I think it was like 1936, he asked them, well, why aren't you signing her? And the studio executive said, well, she can't act. And Henry Wilson said, I didn't say she could act. I said she could be a movie star. and that really sums up Henry Wilson.
What kind of look did he like and help create?
It was very clean cut, very clean cut. And here's what's interesting, because he was homosexual and people think, oh, he must have been, you know, a leftist or a liberal. He was very conservative. You know, he was in the vein of, you know, J. Edgar Hoover or Roy Cohn or Whitaker Chambers. I mean, he was, you know, this real right-wing Republican, and he wanted his stars to be clean cut. And he really took the soldiers and sailors coming out of World War II and fashioned them into stars. And this was a much more macho look than America had been used to, which really was kind of more, you know, Cary Grant and much more urbane and sophisticated. And Henry Wilson, you know, was really helped in this, that there were lots of documentaries about the war, and the guys were often shown, you know, shirtless or whatever. And this was a whole new kind of photography. It was much more real. But these guys all had that, you know, clean cut, crew cut. And that's the way that he dressed them. And basically, that was, you know, the major look of the 1950s. Now, obviously, it went out of fashion in the 1960s. And that's ultimately what did him in.
Now, you describe how he groomed some of his gay actors mm-hmm. to look more straight. What did he
yes.
do?
Well, first off, most of his clients were straight. So there's always this kind of myth. The big myth about Henry Wilson was that he had this all gay client list. And the fact of the matter is that Henry Wilson preferred straight men, not only as clients, but as bed partners. Why he got the all, you know, gay client list is because he handled Rock Hudson and, to a lesser extent, Tab Hunter. And of course, his big creation, his big Galatea, was Rock Hudson. But he would look for any kind of, you know, little mannerisms that was considered effeminate. There was one client of his I talked to who Henry didn't like his laugh, so they kind of worked on a different way that he could laugh at a producer's jokes. You know, he would work on a guy's walk to make sure, you know, it's right out of Tea and Sympathy. And, you know, he might give them dance classes. Or, you know, he would do things like he was a really, even though he was an agent and a manager, he was a brilliant publicist, and he knew how to photograph these guys. And quite often he would photograph them, you know, with guns and bow and arrows and anything macho. And of course, what he really did is that, you know, he put them on a number of studio arranged dates.
You describe how he tried to help Rock Hudson make his voice huskier.
Yes. That was with a vocal coach, Lester Luther, that Henry sent Rock to. And they waited for Rock to get a sore throat, and then they had him screaming for hours. And somehow that took the vocal cords and lowered them a few tones when they had healed. But, of course, it ruined Rock's singing voice, as it would anyone's singing voice. I've never heard of that technique used today. But that is a very famous story. And Henry became very friendly with the acting teachers and the vocal coaches around Hollywood. So he knew when they had young talent, and quite often, you know, they would say, oh, you should, you know, meet Henry Wilson.
You say that Wilson had some gay clients, but most of the actors he represented were straight, and he actually preferred straight men as clients and as bedmates. Was that part of the price for getting him to represent you? Did you have to sleep with him?
Well, it varied. I mean, you know, justified or not, he had the reputation of having the biggest, longest running, you know, gay casting couch in Hollywood. And he was certainly savvy. I mean, there were a number of clients who came to him who came from money, who came from position. They couldn't act. And those people, he might leave alone. But a number of the people he did, I mean, this was an interesting thing that I came across, is that how many of these men he handled were fatherless. I mean, their father was out of the picture. I mean, that's true of Troy Donahue. It's true of Tab Hunter. It's true of Rock Hudson. It was true of Roy Calhoun. I mean, the list really goes on. And, of course, a number of people that the names wouldn't mean anything to you. But there were other people, let's say like John Gavin or Robert Wagner, who came from money and their fathers were still living. And, you know, those. So Henry was savvy on whom he hit on and whom he did not hit on.
My guest is Robert Hoffler. His new book is called The Man Who Invented Rock Hudson. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Robert Hoffler. His new book, The Man Who Invented Rock Hudson, is about Henry Wilson, the agent who helped create Rock Hudson, Tab Hunter, and Troy Donahue. Wilson was gay, but with the exception of Hudson and Hunter, most of his actors were straight and very clean-cut. How did Henry Wilson meet Rock Hudson?
There's a few stories about that, and so quite often in the book, and this is very typical when you start getting into a biography of a gay person, so much of it is oral history, because it was not written down. And there's one story that Rock and Henry told is that Rock had sent some photographs to Henry Wilson, who was head of talent for David O. Selznick in 1948. And that's how they met. And Henry always had an open-door policy. I cannot tell you the number of people, even when Henry was a major agent in the 50s and 60s, that the number of people who came to Henry Wilson directly off the street. And, of course, one of the reasons Henry liked this is that he was the star maker. And also it was a great way to procure men, you know, that the men would come off the street and he'd say, hey, I can make you a star, you know, why don't I give you a tour of my house in Bel Air, you know, that kind of thing. And he would go to Ciro's and Macombo and before that the Trocadero, and there would be all these soldiers. Remember, it was World War II or after, and it was the Port of Los Angeles, and these sailors and soldiers would be at the bar, and he would walk around with his card and go, hey, I can make you a movie star, you know, would you like a tour of my house? And so, you know, this is what he did. But he was also, as an agent, brilliant at what he did. And the crazy names he gave people at that particular time was a brilliant publicity ploy. It got people publicity before they'd even made a movie. Also, he was very well connected in Hollywood. This is what I was talking about with the acting coaches and the vocal teachers. He also plied secretaries and mailroom boys with lots of gifts. He never forgot their birthday because they fed him the screenplays. And sometimes Henry Wilson would get a hold of a screenplay before the producer or the head of the studio had even seen it. And he would go, oh, I've got this guy who's perfect for that role.
How did he give Rock Hudson his name?
The story is that he took it after the Rock of Gibraltar, and he took the river, the Hudson River, that he wanted two strong names. And so that is the story that he told. There were some people I found who said no. Rock Hudson came to Henry Wilson with that name, that Rock Hudson had actually been named that. His real name was Roy Fitzgerald, by a real estate agent named Ken Hodges, who used to be a producer and now wanted to be an agent. And he thought he had found his meal ticket back to Hollywood with this Roy Fitzgerald. And he was actually the one who named him Rock Hudson. I kind of, you know, doubt that story.
Wilson was gay. Wilson knew that Rock Hudson was the gay. What advice did Wilson give Hudson about being seen in public with other men?
Well, it's what he would have told anyone that he represented, and that was that you could never be seen in public with one other man. It was okay to be seen with two other men, because that meant all the guys' night out. But two or four meant a date. Now, what happened to Wilson later in his career, like in the 60s, when kind of drugs and alcohol, and he actually became a little lazy as an agent, he started taking over, you know, a room at the Cock and Bull or Pants' Lazy Susan or Scandia, a number of these restaurants, and he would have three or four tables of young, attractive men. And to Henry Wilson's way of thinking, this did not read as like, you know, the back room of a gay bar. It read like kind of the boys' night out, kicking back a few after the football game. What was interesting is that Henry became notorious in Hollywood, but Henry didn't know that. But it was an open secret that he was gay, and particularly when he arranged for the marriage of his secretary, Phyllis Gates, to Rock Hudson, you know, people started laughing about it. I mean, I talked to Tony Curtis, I talked to Debbie Reynolds, and they just said, you know, that was the point at which everyone in Hollywood just openly started talking about the fact that Rock Hudson was gay. But Henry was a little delusional. And I talked to Dennis Hopper, and he was just saying, well, Henry was obvious. He just openly came on to you, and he didn't care who else was in the room. And yet Henry didn't see it that way. I mean, people talked about Henry being with Roy Calhoun on the set of movies in like the early 50s, and they just said it was obvious that, you know, Henry Wilson was in love with Roy Calhoun. There was a head of talent at MGM who first met Roy Fitzgerald before he was named Rock Hudson, which is why I doubt that story about Ken Hodges, who said that, you know, Henry was holding, you know, Roy Fitzgerald's hand during the job interview at, like, MGM, because Roy Fitzgerald, Rock Hudson, was so nervous. It was obvious, she says, that these men were lovers.
So Henry Wilson, Rock Hudson's agent, basically found a wife, you say, for Rock Hudson, and that wife was Henry Wilson's secretary, Phyllis Gates. What did you find out about why Henry Wilson thought the time was right for this marriage, and why did he set up Rock Hudson with his secretary?
Well, you know, that was a major mistake for lots of reasons. And, you know, a big one is that he didn't look far enough. I mean, you know, if you want to set someone up with Rock Hudson, you know, you don't set him up with your secretary. You know, everyone in Hollywood knew what was going on. But the fact of the matter is that the general public never kind of caught on to what was going on. So, you know, it's kind of like, okay. And Terry Moore, who was a starlet at the time, she says, you know, it didn't matter in Hollywood what, you know, Hollywood, you know, insiders knew. It was what the general public knew. The other thing about the Rock Hudson that protected him in Hollywood, I've been covering, you know, the celebrity game here for, you know, about 30 years. And I have to say, rarely have I heard anyone say that Rock Hudson, those people who knew him, that he just wasn't the nicest guy in the world, that Hollywood adored him. And he was a real Hollywood creation, as opposed to the other big stars at that time who were like, you know, Montgomery Clift, James Dean, or Marlon Brando, who came from Broadway. He was essentially, you know, a hometown boy.
When Henry Wilson, Rock Hudson's agent, suggested that it was time Hudson get married, was Wilson worried that the story was about to break, that Hudson was gay?
He had at least two ex-lovers of Rock Hudson had been approached by Confidential for $10,000 each to tell their story.
And Confidential was like a Hollywood tabloid magazine.
Oh, yeah. The biggest. But you have to also remember, that was 1954, late in 1954, and Rock had just been cast in Giant, George Stevens' big movie. And that was the plum role. Henry already knew that there were two guys who had been approached who refused to cooperate because they still liked Rock. But something had to be done. And I don't know if Confidential, which, you know, was paid off by the studios, but this I do know, that Universal also had Roy Calhoun under contract at that time. And in the May issue of Confidential, there was a trade-off that Rock Hudson would be spared and Roy Calhoun, who had a prison record and was in the federal penitentiary for a number of years, would be exposed in Confidential. And that was a trade-off. Actually, that kind of prison record actually helped Roy Calhoun's career. He did lots of, you know, sob story interviews and whatever. And that was in the May issue. That summer, Tab Hunter fired Henry Wilson. This was written about in The Hollywood Reporter. A couple of very scathing items were written by a gossip columnist for The Hollywood Reporter named Mike Conley, who was a good friend of Henry Wilson's. He wrote two scathing items about Tab Hunter firing Henry Wilson. And in the September issue of Confidential, Tab Hunter's story about being at this pajama party in Glendale was written about in Confidential. Now, that was an old arrest. That was a five-year-old arrest that had remained buried. One of the few people who knew about it was Henry Wilson. And his friend was Mike Conley, who was an informant for Confidential. Mike Conley, his byline appeared in The Hollywood Reporter, but Mike Conley was also gay and was being blackmailed by Confidential. And in exchange that they would not expose him as a homosexual, Mike Conley gave them gossip that he could not publish in The Hollywood Reporter. Then, in October, that was the September issue of Confidential, in October, Rock Hudson got the cover of Life magazine. Now, this is staid old Life magazine. They put him on the cover. They called him the most handsome bachelor in Hollywood. But on the inside, they really very blatantly asked, why isn't he married? He's going to be 30 years old soon. He'd better explain to his fans why he's not married. I mean, that's about as uncoded as you can get. I mean, that's just practically outing a person. And the next month, Rock Hudson was married.
You know, the picture you're painting is of, you know, like blackmail and trading one person's secrets to prevent somebody from outing you or outing your client. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it was really dirty.
Well, you get into the whole House on American Activities, and I don't think I'm going too far afield talking about this, but you have to remember that in the 50s, there were more homosexuals who were let go from the State Department than there were suspected communists. That to be a subversive, you know, it just wasn't political. You know, to be considered a subversive, you know, you were, you know, if you were suspected of being a homosexual, you know, that was enough to fire someone. As I said earlier in this interview, homosexuality could only be mentioned as an accusation at that particular time. And that's one thing that we keep forgetting about when we look at this behavior. But you also see, well, here was J. Edgar Hoover, who was gay, and you had Whitaker Chambers, and you had Roy Cohn. And, you know, it could be that they were just politically conservative men, and they just, this is the way they were, and if they were straight or gay. But I think that their homosexuality probably played into it in that, you know, they were like, hey, I'm not gay. I'm a true American. You know, I'm not a cultural subversive. I'm not a political subversive. So they did this as a kind of cover.
So if you were outed in the 50s, it not only would have meant that people would question whether you could be a leading man in a movie, but your patriotism would be questioned, too. You're standing as an American.
I think at that particular time, you have to realize that it was Senator McCarthy who had a very famous line, which was that if you're against me, you have to be either a communist or, and he had a slur for homosexual.
My guest is Robert Hoffler. His new book is called The Man Who Invented Rock Hudson. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air.
Power! Uh-huh. See. Oh, yeah.
My guest is Robert Hoffler. His new book, The Man Who Invented Rock Hudson, is about Henry Wilson, the agent who helped create Rock Hudson, Tab Hunter, and Troy Donahue. Wilson was gay, but with the exception of Hudson and Hunter, most of his actors were straight. You quote some of the FBI files on Rock Hudson. Did you get those files through the Freedom of Information Act?
Yes. Yes.
What are some of the things you found in there?
Well,
first of all, why did the FBI have a file on him in the first place?
There were two reasons, and it goes back to, you know, what we just talked about, and that was that he was considered subversive because he was a homosexual. You know, that they were, you know, out to, I don't say expose, but they wanted to know what homosexuals were up to. I mean, they were degenerates. I mean, this was the American culture. It was being sullied. And you know, I suppose it in a similar way, it's like how many people during that period who were suspected of being communist were Jews. You know, it's that kind of thinking, oh, well, the Jews are more likely to be communist, the homosexuals are more likely to be communist. I don't know. But that was the major reason they kept it. The other thing is also, and this was a little bit later in Rock's career, because I believe the file was kept for over 10 years, is that he was up for some roles to play an FBI agent. And so all of those scripts had to be vetted. But if you really look through the files, you know, most of it had to do with, like, you know, Rock Hudson attended this orgy. Now, unfortunately, I have to say, they had a whole list of other names that were blocked out because I was asking about Rock Hudson. So all these other names, which looked like it could be a couple of dozen names, were blacked out. And the one interesting thing in there is that I would say the file started in 1959, which was the year that Henry Wilson and his assistant were interviewed by the FBI. And the FBI came in and said, is Rock Hudson homosexual, or are you two guys homosexual? And they asked for some names. And that's when the file started. I think they closed it in the early 70s. But in the early 60s, there was a very interesting item in it saying that Rock Hudson had a close associate who could be trusted to be an informant. And it was around that time that Henry Wilson's assistants told me that Henry Wilson started, when people would threaten blackmail or they would say something he didn't like, he would say, they'd better not, I'll get J. Edgar Hoover on them. And this was something that, you know, he used a lot. Whether he was the informant or not, I don't know. There was also a very funny line. Well, it's funny and it's sad, is that when Rock Hudson was interviewed in the file, it said that two mature FBI agents would be sent to interview Rock Hudson.
Why is that funny?
Because they had to be mature, and they had to send two. They couldn't send one FBI agent because, you know, Rock Hudson might seduce them because he's this degenerate homosexual.
Got it.
So they had to send two mature, and they made a big deal out of this.
You've been covering movie celebrities for decades. Do you think the American movie-going public is ready to accept leading men or leading ladies who are gay or lesbian?
You know, I hate to say that I don't think they're ready because that seems to perpetuate it. And yet, you know, that's what I would have to say. And I think someday it will happen, and it will be someone not like a Rock Hudson, but someone like a Montgomery Clift or a James Dean who comes out of the theater. They're put in an indie movie, or they come out of the British theater and they make a British movie and they play a romantic leading man, and all of a sudden this little movie takes off at the box office. They win an Oscar. And this guy goes like, you know, I just don't really care that much about a movie career. And then we will see what happens. And this is a person who can go back and forth between movies and the theater. And there's so many independent movies now that, you know, it's conceivable that you don't have to have this huge box office. But here's my theory. And for the last 6 years, I was the theater reporter for Variety. There's a big difference between the theater and film. And Henry Wilson actually worked for Variety, wrote for Variety in the late 20s. About the theater, and then when he moved to Hollywood, he had this, you know, mantra, which was, I didn't say she could act, she could be a movie star, you know, that kind of stuff, is that the movies are about sexual fantasies. The theater is not. The theater is about talent. The theater is about being able to hold the stage for 2 hours. That isn't really what the movies are about. And the movies are constantly asking you to turn on to either violence or sex. I mean, Pauline Kael said it all. It is all kiss, kiss, bang, bang. And that is what the movies sell primarily, is having it, being sexually attractive, being a sexual fantasy. And the fact of the matter is that in our culture, you know, most people, you know, fantasize about, you know, the opposite sex.
Robert Hoffler, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Robert Hoffler is the author of the new book, The Men Who Invented Rock Hudson. He works for Variety. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our senior producer is Roberta Sharrock. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Patty Leswing, Ian Chillog, Sam Brigger, Mike and Scott, and Joan Tui Westman. I'm Terry Gross.
CDs and transcripts of Fresh Air are available from Burrell's at 1-877-213-7374. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. Additional support for NPR comes from American Jewish World Service in support of NPR's expanding coverage of Africa. Information about AJWS-funded projects at ajws.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Mike Wallace. He's just published a book of his favorite interviews called Between You and Me. And we talk with historian Doris Kearns Goodwin. Her new book, Team of Rivals, is about President Lincoln and his cabinet. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.